Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 461 for January 17th, 2014, the first of two episodes this weekend from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. Coming up in a few minutes...
Most of the winning whiskeys were whiskeys that weren't on the market 2 or 3 years ago.
The 4th Annual Canadian Whiskey Awards were presented by Davin DeKergamo Thursday night here in Victoria, and Corby's Lot No. 40 100% Rye won Canadian Whiskey of the Year honors. I'll have much more on the awards, including interviews with the winners, later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events and your voice, all on this episode of WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. There was no way to escape hearing about the big story of the week, Suntory's $16 billion deal to acquire Beam. Assuming the deal gets regulatory approval in the next couple of months, Beam shareholders will get $83.50 a share in cash. That's a 25% premium over Beam's closing price last Friday in New York trading. Suntory is trying to diversify its holdings outside of Japan, and this deal will make Suntory the world's third largest spirits company behind Diageo and Pernod Ricard. Current Beam management will stay in place. No major changes are expected after the deal closes. Beam will continue to be run out of its headquarters in the Chicago suburbs. One side note, I have it on very good authority that Beam's North American president, Bill Newlands, opened a conference call Tuesday morning with a hearty konnichiwa. Of course, that's a traditional Japanese greeting, followed by some laughs on the call. I'll have my take on the Suntory Beam deal later on, but there's been a lot of opposition to the sale. At least one shareholder lawsuit has been filed already to block the sale, claiming that Beam's directors did not get enough for the company and had their own best interests in mind. And the thought of a high-profile American brand like Jim Beam being owned by a Japanese company caused a lot of loud and occasionally disturbing chatter on various internet forums. Brown-Forman threw a little gasoline on that fire, too, with social media posts for Woodford Reserve and Early Times touting them as American-made and American-owned. There was another distillery merger to report this week, this one in Australia, where Lark Distillery's owners have agreed to acquire the Old Hobart Distillery from Casey and Jane Overeem for an undisclosed amount. Last year, Bill and Lynn Lark sold a majority stake in Tasmania's first licensed distillery since 1839 to a group of Hobart-based investors. Lynn retired from the distillery at the start of this month, while Bill will be scaling back his work over time and still serve as Lark's global ambassador. Over at Old Hobart, Casey Overeem is moving into what's being described as semi-retirement, while Jane Overeem will stay on as marketing director for both distilleries. The Lark and Old Hobart's Overeem whiskeys will continue to be produced separately. In other news, I hinted last week at the coming announcement of the Kentucky Bourbon Affair in Louisville and the surrounding area this May. The Kentucky Distillers Association officially announced the festival on Monday, and it's more of a bourbon fantasy camp than a whiskey festival, with the focus on celebrating the 50th anniversary of the congressional resolution that declared bourbon as America's native spirit. 8 different distilleries will be offering exclusive experiences during the weekend, ranging from bourbon blending sessions and cooking classes to a recreation of the hunting trips that gave Wild Turkey its name. Most of the 50 golden tickets that give purchasers first crack at the events have already been sold at $1,350 each. Tickets for individual events will go on sale a few weeks from now. I've already mentioned one of Wild Turkey's events, but another part of the distillery's experience brought us word of an as-yet undisclosed bourbon coming later this year. 2014 marks Jimmy Russell's 60th anniversary at Wild Turkey, and a special single-barrel bourbon called Diamonds will be released to mark the occasion. Wild Turkey had not said anything about Diamonds yet, but participants in the Wild Turkey experience during the Kentucky Bourbon Affair will get the first chance to taste it. I'll let you know as more details become available. Meanwhile, Heaven Hill has released this year's Evan Williams single-barrel bourbon. The 2004 vintage is bottled at the same proof as the previous 18 editions, 43.3% ABV. It'll be available later this month at U.S. retailers for around $26.99 a bottle. Crown Royal will be releasing a new cognac-finished version later this month. Crown Royal XO uses a blend of 50 different Crown Royal variations finished in French Limousine oak casks. And finally, Diageo's $1.5 billion expansion in Scotland continues. This week, Diageo submitted plans to the Highland Council for a $45 million project at Clynelish Distillery. The distillery will get a doubling of capacity to around 9 million liters of spirit a year. Work could begin later this year if the permits are approved quickly. Meanwhile, Glen Ord's expansion took another step this week with the installation of 6 new stills and 10 new washbacks at the distillery. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Introducing Glenmorangie Companta, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range. A complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte de Rhône French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
Once again, this is the first of two episodes this weekend from the Victoria Whiskey Festival. Check back for the second episode on Sunday with highlights from the festival this weekend. Special thanks to the organizers of the Victoria Whiskey Festival for making this weekend's special coverage possible. Your voice is brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Let's look at some of your reactions to Suntory's $16 billion deal to buy Beam. Scott Hartig is looking at the bigger picture here. He said, hopefully this means we'll see more of Suntory's Japanese whiskeys available in the U.S. As a Beam shareholder, the 25% premium makes me happy. Jeff Weber had a similar viewpoint. Here's to globalization, he wrote, toasting with a Four Roses Curinoned Mint Julep. We can speculate all that we want to, but given Suntory's track record in the wine and spirits industry, Beam will be in good hands. Of course, 2014 marks the 30th anniversary of Suntory's deal to buy Morrison Bowmore Distillers in Scotland, and the fact that there's been minimal interference from Suntory over the years has some people very optimistic, like Adam Edwards. He wrote, Bowmore certainly has not lacked in quality under Suntory's ownership. Having a dram of the Devil's Cask right now is proof of that. Bill Ricker had this thought, if Rachel Berry takes on Laphroaig, it could be Ardbeg on steroids. And Matthew T. from Cleveland tweeted this response. We live in a global market, and whiskey is part of that. They bought it because it's a performer and likely won't change much. Now, these comments have all been positive, and while there has been a lot of bashing at other websites, I haven't seen any negative comments yet at whiskeycast.com or on our Facebook page. I'd like to thank Alex Luxenberg of New York City for a tweet he posted earlier this week, looking for some suggestions. He tweeted, if you are a whiskey fan, it is imperative that you listen to WhiskeyCast. If you do listen, are there any particular episodes that you recommend downloading? Well, Alex, I'd suggest you download them all. Last year's episodes added up to 2,128 minutes of content. It would take you 35 hours and 46 minutes to listen to them all back to back. Your boss won't mind if you do. If you have suggestions on specific episodes Alex should listen to, you can always post them on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at WhiskeyCast, too. Your Voice is sponsored this time around by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Laphroaig. Jura's Willie Tate will be leading a tasting at the Bedford Cheese Shop in New York City on the 22nd. The Green Island Pub in Zeitz, Germany will have a tasting of Isle of Malts on Burns Night, January 25th. There are a lot of tastings set for that night. Check the calendar at whiskeycast.com for the ones in your area. Mike Veach will lead a Filson Bourbon Academy class in Covington, Kentucky on the 25th as well. The next McTears Whiskey Auction is set for January 29th in Glasgow. And Whiskey Live Belgium is the weekend of January 29th through February 1st in Spa. More events on this weekend's bonus episode. You can always look for whiskey events in your area, though, on the calendar at whiskeycast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
Whiskey Cast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Anton Sweeney, spirit store foreman, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
What I like about Redbreast is so smooth, mellow, and just after one or two, you just kind of go into a state of a tranquility. I suppose you could say most breasts need a bit of a lift, but this breast gives you one hell of a lift.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
I had the privilege again this year to be one of the judges for the annual Canadian Whiskey Awards, and this year's competition was tougher than ever. How tough? With 9 judges on the blind tasting panel, the top 3 whiskeys vying for Canadian Whiskey of the Year honors were separated by just 0.2 of a point. Corby's Lot No. 40 2012 edition barely edged out 40 Creek's Heart of Gold and Masterson's 10-year-old straight rye for the title. Corby brought back Lot No. 40 in 2012, 12 years or so after it was taken off the market, and it's a move that paid off Thursday night. Dave Weaver accepted the award for Corby's team back in Windsor, Ontario.
We were very excited. We knew it was a great product, and it's doing great things in the marketplace, so couldn't be happier. Very, very proud of it.
And this is a credit goes to Don Livermore for bringing this one back, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So he brought this back along with Pike Creek.
Lot No. 40 ended a 3-year run at the top for 40 Creek, and while one might expect John Hall to be mildly disappointed at losing by such a slim margin, that's not the case. John sees a bigger picture in the results.
I am extremely pleased that I only lost by 0.2 of a point, but I'm also extremely pleased, Mark, that there's a lot more exciting Canadian whiskeys out there now. I mean, when I started, that's really why I got into the Canadian whiskey making, is because I wanted to bring craftsmanship and a spark back to the Canadian whiskey sector. And isn't it great? Now, you know, 4 years later, there's a whiskey that has won. And yes, it only won by that. But they're all great whiskey, tasting whiskeys.
And what I think a lot of people in this room tonight were excited about was just the overall numbers and the overall growth for the market for Canadian whiskey. What do you attribute this to?
It's fantastic to see the growth, and it's all the growth is coming from good quality Canadian whiskeys. And I think a lot of that is because people are starting to look. You know, it started with Scotch whiskeys back 10 years ago, then bourbons. And now it's Canadian whiskey's turn to stand on center stage. And Canadian whiskey can have all kinds of nuances and flavors and be extremely enjoyable. And I think people are really just discovering it.
Masterson's 10-year-old rye rounded out the top 3. And bottler 35 Maple Street also took a gold medal for the Masterson's 100% straight wheat whiskey, which I had tasting notes for on last week's episode. 35 Maple Street sources its whiskeys from Alberta Distillers in Calgary, but does its own blending. And Richard Zeller was thrilled with the results.
I'm feeling incredible. I'm honored. I'm humbled. I'm thrilled to even be considered among those superstars, especially as a new product this year. Just the mere fact that, you know, we haven't had Masterson's wheat out for 20 years, 10 years, 8 years, 3 years. It's 2013, and for me to even be in that world of being considered is way beyond any expectation I ever had.
Now, you built the Masterson's reputation so far with rye. Why do the wheat whiskey?
Opportunity, innovation. The whiskey world, as Davin spoke about, and yourself and everybody else in the room, the whiskey world is changing. It's not only corn and it's not only rye. it was just an opportunity. And as we were going through the process, we thought about what's innovative, what's going to drive people to the whiskey scene. And I believe personally, what drives people is innovation.
Where do you take Masterson's from here? Because you still have the entire Canadian market left to conquer, because there's not much Masterson's in Canada. You still have a lot of the U.S. market to conquer, plus any other export markets after that. Where do you take this brand?
Oh, boy. That's the $10 million question, or that's the secret question. Where we take it, it will always be small, I believe. And, yeah. I mean, we're already shipping to 5 different countries, and I have to actually slow it down a little bit. I'll never see it as a massive brand because it's an aged brand. The minimum number of years is 10 years, and we now have released 12 year. Where we take it is, the long and short answer is anybody's guess right now. We have inquiries from 25 different countries right now, and I've had to kind of back off because I really want to take care of America, and actually, for that matter, North America, which is my primary market, which is Canada and the U.S.
In fact, all 3 of the top whiskeys and 7 of the 10 gold medal winners weren't on the market when the first Canadian Whiskey Awards were handed out 4 years ago. The awards were created by Davin DeKergamo, who points out that Canadian whiskey exports jumped 25% during 2013.
The flavor profile of Canadian whiskey is changing. I think because so many of young people are coming in, they want big, bold whiskeys. And yes, Canadian whiskey is really growing. And we've got these wonderfully rich, full-bodied whiskeys with lots of flavor. So yeah, Canadian whiskey is changing. It's a big year. And it's still going up. It's still climbing.
Why do you think the flavors went bold all of a sudden?
I think that's what people were demanding. I think they see the big sales of American rye, they see the big sales of bourbon, and I think, you know, the millennial generation is really having a huge influence, and they want big flavor. And these whiskey makers are not dumb. They follow the trends in the marketplace, and they know if you put a bit more rye in it, you get more flavor. If you put a little bit more new wood, you get more flavor, and they're doing this, and they're making wonderful new whiskeys.
Any surprises this year?
I was surprised how brutal the judges were this year. We had a lot fewer gold medal whiskeys this year, but no, we did fairly well. I think it was just a delight to see a couple of micro distilleries win medals this year. They've entered before and not won medals, but this year they did. So I think that the micro distilling industry is coming along well in Canada.
You'll find a complete list of award winners on the news page at whiskeycast.com, along with a link to the list of all medal winners. Now, I'm saving the What I'm Tasting This Week department for our second episode of the Victoria Whiskey Festival weekend coming up on Sunday. In its place this time around, I'd like to share my own thoughts on the Suntory acquisition of Beam, since that's been the only topic that people have wanted to talk about this weekend in Victoria. First off, this is not the end of the world as we know it. The day after the deal closes, they'll still be making Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, and the other Beam bourbons in Kentucky. There will not be Japanese flags flying over the distilleries. There have been some xenophobic and fairly ignorant posts on Jim Beam's Facebook page and other websites from people who claim they'll never buy a Jim Beam product again. One guy said he's going to switch to Knob Creek. Yeah, that's a Jim Beam product too. As Chuck Cattery and other bourbon historians have pointed out, it was foreign investment, especially from Japan, that helped save the bourbon industry back in the 80s. Sazerac wound up buying what is now Buffalo Trace from a Japanese investor. Kirin saved Four Roses from the Seagram years. And not only did they not change Four Roses, they gave Jim Rutledge the green light to bring the good Four Roses bourbons back into the U.S. While Turkey is owned by Campari, the Italian company bought it from Pernod Ricard, the French, a few years ago. And remember that Maker's Mark was owned by Hiram Walker, a Canadian company, and later Allied Domecq of Britain, before Beam bought it in 2005. Suntory did not buy Beam to change things. It bought brands and people with a good track record. And just as with Morrison Bowmore 30 years ago, there won't be many visible changes. In fact, the only place you'll ever see anything referring to Suntory at Morrison Bowmore is a small logo on the company's corporate webpage, and you'll see the Suntory whiskeys on sale at the Bowmore gift shop. In my opinion, this is the best thing that could have happened for Beam. If either Diageo or Pernod Ricard had bought Beam, chunks of the company would have to be sold off to satisfy antitrust issues, more than likely. If another private equity investor were to come in, well, you just have to look at the example of William Ackman, who became the largest shareholder of Fortune Brands 3 years ago, then forced the breakup that made Beam a standalone company. Private equity and hedge fund investors want to unlock shareholder value. Ackman's reported profit by unlocking the shareholder value in Fortune Brands and Beam is estimated at close to $700 million after the Suntory deal. An Ackman-like buyer would also lead to more sell-offs and job cuts, and possibly compromise on the quality of the whiskey to make more profits. In short, take a deep breath and relax. While there will probably be some jobs lost, and that's unfortunate, most of Beam's people around the world should keep their jobs. And the key thing is, the whiskey isn't going to change. I'd love to hear what you have to say. You can post your comments on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events and the latest whiskey news, my photo gallery and print shop, and a complete archive of past episodes dating all the way back to 2005. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you this weekend from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.